Welcome to a series of podcasts from the Irish Linen Centre and Lisburn Museum. In these podcasts, we talk to historians, journalists, authors, and community practitioners, and invite them to share their research, their love of museums, and their thoughts on the role museums play in society. This podcast has been made possible with the generous support from Lisburn and Castlereagh City Council. Hello and welcome to our next episode of the Winter Talk series, and joining me today are Linda Irvine from TURIS, the Irish Language Project in East Belfast, Carmel Duggan from Cairdhe TURIS, Friends of TURIS, and Lisa Ray Curry, who's the Heritage Officer for the Eastside Partnership. You're all very welcome. Welcome to the Lisburn Museum.
Thank you.
This is a part of our Winter Talk series, and we're all really looking forward to tonight's talk because it's a panel event with our three guests here. Linda, I want to start with you. You're very well known for being an Irish language activist. I suppose the question that a lot of people would want to know is, how did you become involved and what attracted you to the Irish language?
Absolutely accidentally. So it was through East Belfast Mission, and I work for East Belfast Mission. TURIS is a project of East Belfast Mission. I was part of a cross-community women's group there almost 11 years ago now, and we did an introduction to the Irish language, and I fell in love with the language, and that's basically where it started from. I started then going to classes in another part of Belfast, in Andreahead, and then a journalist got the hold of the story, because my husband at the time was the leader of the Progressive Unionist Party. So I mentioned East Belfast Mission. They were inundated by people locally who said, here, we want to go to your Irish class. And there was no Irish class. It had been a six-week taster. So they approached me and we started a class, and both the rest is history.
Yeah, and how long have you been involved in it now?
11 years now.
11 years. Yeah, and it seems, we'll find out tonight, that it's going from strength to strength. Carmel, can I just talk to you, because you had a really interesting project quite recently on Irish-speaking soldiers from East Belfast. Can you tell us the origin of that project?
Well, really it had its origins in a small piece of work that had been done by TURIS several years previously, which just looked at Irish speakers in the census of 1901 and 1911. And subsequently it was found that some of those Irish speakers were actually soldiers in the First World War. So that kind of spurred us on to look for funding, which Cairdhe TURIS got funding from the National Literary Heritage Fund. And about a group of us came together then to undertake the research. It was community-based research. None of us were trained historians, although some of us did have a bit of practice in that area. So we stayed with it for about 2 years. We ran into COVID, which, you know, limited us in some ways, but we ended up producing an exhibition and a website and a video, and I think they've generated quite a bit of interest.
Yeah, and both the work that both you and Linda do is, it's very rooted in the community, and a lot of community input, isn't it?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, the group that were involved in the research project were pretty much all from East Belfast, and some of them, you know, having sort of long term memories of the area. So it was quite a lovely project actually, and Peter brought a lot of their own ways of thinking to bear on it, and their own, you know, areas of interest and recollection. So yeah, it was very, very, very much rooted in the community.
And Lisa, your work is very rooted in the community in East Belfast too. Can you tell us how you became involved in your work?
I've been doing working at the intersection of like community development or youth work and heritage for on and off for nearly 20 years. I know I don't look that old. I had a background in youth and community work, and I did my master's in museum studies, and I sort of ended up finding these jobs that were a lovely mixture of both of them. So for the last 4 years, I've been working for Eastside Partnership, which is an urban regeneration charity, as the heritage officer there. And the idea is that we're using community-led heritage work to really further the aims of urban regeneration, so that people will have a stronger sense of their place, and like increased civic pride and a greater sense of community. And it's all done through sort of community-led work, like Carmel's been describing, very similar processes. Bring people together from the community, and they'd self-select from like a whole range of groups and backgrounds, and decide what they want to work on, and I help them do that. So we've uncovered a whole range of different stories from East Belfast, and we work together to try and make those public, whether it's through exhibition or street art or heritage trails, or some other way that other people can sort of enjoy the landscape through the storytelling.
So it's a multi-strand approach to community development. Would that be?
Yeah, I suppose it does. Like, it's really rooted in sort of community development. It's very, we would term it as asset-based community development. We start with what's strong and not what's wrong. So we're asking people, like, what are the stories that you have that you want to share with people? What is it that's great about this place that you want everyone else to know about? And sort of embark on a project that could last some 3 weeks or 3 months to maybe 12 months, like exploring those topics and discovering the skills to help make those public. So I would work with people to sort of learn how to use archives or write for heritage panels or how to put an exhibition together or how to create a trail. So bring in facilitators from outside to deliver that training, and then we end up with a bunch of people in the community who are really empowered to tell their own stories.
Linda, if we can just go back to you, like the other projects, it's not just the Irish language, there's also other cultural events and cultural programmes. But one of the ones that I've really wanted to go on is the Gaelic East Belfast History Tour. Can you tell us how important is that for local people who want to get involved in learning the language?
Well, I think the tours have been really interesting, and they came out of the work that my colleague, Dr. Gordon McCoy, had done. And Gordon lives in East Belfast, and he'd done a lot of research into the local history, especially around Con O'Neill, who's the last Gaelic Lord. And Gordon is an academic. He's Dr. Gordon McCoy. I'm a much more simple soul. So Gordon loves a good lecture, and I kind of wanted to sort of simplify it, I suppose, and make it more accessible. So we turned it into a pilot bus tour to start off with, which went down really, really well. And then that ended up growing into two bus tours. So now we have the Gaelic East Belfast one, which goes through a range of different history, all connected with the Irish language and Irish culture. And the Con O'Neill one, which is a storytelling one. And you get off at the different stops associated with Con O'Neill's life in those places in and around East Belfast. It's mostly local people who do the tours. Now, we do get people who'll come over from West Belfast or other parts of Belfast, and we'll get a small number of tourists, but mainly local people. And on our feedback forms, it's so interesting, because people will continually write, you know, I've lived in East Belfast all my life. I've walked past these places, you know. I've known this place all my life, but I didn't know the history associated with it. So it really reveals something to them about their own place and increases their own local knowledge. So it's been really, really edifying for me, you know, just to, I suppose, show people another side of East Belfast.
Carmel, your project has also shown people another side of East Belfast. Going by 1901 and 1911 census, which you've used, can you give us a sense of what East Belfast was like 110 years ago?
Yeah, we focused on the 1911 census just because it was that much closer to the war. And it was really interesting to find out just what the area was like. We were surprised, we would have known that area grew up to a large extent in response to the influx of industry and the growth of employment in the area. And so an awful lot of the houses, even in 1911, an awful lot of the houses and the streets were actually quite new. They were less than 10 years old. So in parts of the area, and we're talking about inner East Belfast now, in parts of that area, like, there were communities that were just being formed. They weren't long-standing communities. They were just information. And there was a huge amount of movement within the communities. People tended to move house every few years, which made our research quite difficult because we were trying to chase up addresses and so on. And people had come in, because of the employment, people had come in from all parts of the country. So in one of the wards, just for example, there were people from every single county in Ireland were represented there. So it was much more diverse than you would, than, you know, I think was generally thought of. Mm-hmm. There was also religious mix was quite diverse too. At least a quarter of the population were Catholic, and they were kind of sprinkled throughout the area. They weren't sort of living in, you know, concentrated areas. They were sort of distributed widely. So most of the neighbourhoods would have been a bit mixed. And then there was quite a bit of Irish spoken at the time for various reasons, including the fact that people had moved into the area from parts of the country where the language was still quite strong. Also because the language had actually been taught in the Catholic primary schools at that point. But Conran na Gaeilge, the Gaelic League, was really strong in East Belfast at that time and had set up classes for adults. And they had been running for a number of years up to 1911. and beyond, and that the Conradh na Gaeilge actually was very well supported by prominent members of the Unionist community and Protestant churches, and even prominent members of the Orange Order. So it was much more homogenous, I think, far less homogenous than one might have thought, and a much more mixed and diverse area.
Lisa, can I go to you again? One of the recent projects that you've been involved in is Strandtown. Can you tell us a bit about that and what you discovered about that area of Belfast?
Oh my goodness. Well, Strandtown was part of a project we did called Connections. So we ran it in three different neighbourhoods, and it was like a little tiny exploration of like a few streets at a time. And we brought together about 16 people who met every week for about 3 months. And we just decided to like explore the area. We went out, took pictures, did a bit of research, got some talks done, and people brought their own stories about the place. And I suppose what I found really interesting was, well, there were lots of stories there that I should have known as a heritage officer in the area and didn't. There was a tin town really close to Strandtown, which was made up of the huts that were built after the Second World War, and they were there right up until the 60s. I don't know, do you remember that, Linda?
I don't remember them, but my aunt and uncle lived in the prefabs at Avonale.
Yeah.
Not actually Strandtown.
So there were like so much temporary housing because of the impact of the Second World War. And some of the people in the group were able to remember seeing those houses and playing like football team against there. And again, it was much more mixed as well. That was within living memory right up until the 60s, that there was there was Catholic places of worship, and even there was a rumor of a convent as well in the area, but we never quite pinpointed that down. So that's always part of our process too, is taking those stories and like seeing if we can find any research to back them up. But that was in one of the stories that was brought to the group. So it was just fascinating. We had the famous stories from Strandtown too, like all of the C.S. Lewis connections as well. We were able to celebrate those. Both sets of his grandparents lived there. He lived there until he was 9, until he went off to school. It was just a gorgeous process to be through. And the group decided themselves that they wanted to create a timeline, sort of celebrating their stories interwoven with those big stories, like the C.S. Lewis one. And it's on display at what's called Gelston's Corner, which is the site of the former Park Avenue Hotel. So you can walk past and read the whole history of Strandtown through their picture timeline, and the group put together themselves, very proud of them.
Yeah. So you're in a museum at the moment, and Linda, I suppose with Irish being probably a living, breathing thing, it doesn't neatly fit into a museum. But if there's one thing that you have discovered in your journey, and if you were to curate an exhibition of this, what would be one thing that you would put into a museum?
I think the Lough Gan Naoimhne, the place names, because they're so beautiful. And I think a lot of people, that's how they begin their journey with the language, when they realise that this language that they had felt no connection with, felt, you know, wasn't relevant, was suddenly this awakening that it was all around you. So even as we sit here in Lisburn, and obviously the original name of Lisburn, Lisnagarawak, so the Fort of the Gamblers, you know, these little hidden stories. So to me, I'm always keen to share those with people. So an exhibition of Lough Gan Naoimhne, place names.
Carmel, from your project on Irish-speaking soldiers, what would you put in the museum?
I suppose there's lots of things you could put in from that particular piece of work, because it just would lend itself. You could put the whole thing into the museum. But if I had to pick one thing, I think it was quite an emotional project for us to be involved in many ways. And I think one of the things that would strike you was when you looked at the original household census forms that were filled in April in 1911, often, you know, and usually in the father's hand, and he would record the names of his children and his young sons and say they were at school or they were, you know, an apprentice this or whatever. And then a few years later, many of those young lads were dead. And I think that's really a very emotive kind of link to those young lives that were lost in that war. Mm. So I would put in some of the original census forms.
Okay. Lisa, you have been working with museums and the pandemics past and present and things like that there, what would be one thing from your work that you would put in a museum?
That is such a hard question. because the pandemics past and present we did with the Ulster Museum was a contemporary collecting project. So there was lots of very ordinary things that we did collect, like toilet roll, because of like panic over finding toilet roll, and hand sanitizer, and all of those things that tell the story of like those early days of lockdown. So I suppose for me, the lovely thing was finding like the story and the meaning and the very ordinary things that we can collect, it, you know, explain who we are and you know what's important to us. So I'd probably pick something very, very ordinary. Like, I don't know, for me it's always probably a notebook or something. That's like where all the ideas and all of the all of the stories that we collected through conversation with people, and like some, you bump into someone in a coffee shop and they tell you something else about their granny and you're like, that's brilliant, I have to put that in an exhibition somewhere. So yeah, some way of collecting those maybe.
It is hard to narrow down to one thing, but just like to thank you for taking the time out to speak with me today, and I'm very much looking forward to the panel discussion later.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.